more than just points. I think he has a strong case. It's incredible the way that Eric Spoelstra has just let him basically become a point forward. He distributes the ball, he rebounds, he plays great defense. The problem is that award traditionally just goes to whoever scores the most points off the bench. So it could end up being Eric Gordon or maybe Lou Williams, a couple of Rockets. But if it's about who's been the most well-rounded player, James would have a very strong argument.
Well, it's interesting because he was on, I think, for 3 or 4 days in a row on a show, ESPN radio show, the Dan Le Batard show. He was on his show a long time. And, of course, I know that's based out of Miami, but they were having all sorts of fun with him. And he was great on there, but got a lot of pub, I think, there. You know, if you can be on that type of platform, I think that helps as well. But, man, I mean, he's having a fantastic year. Does he get a new I mean, can he restructure a contract? What is his contract terms right now? And do you think he's going to, if he gets a new deal, going to have a big payday coming his way?
Yeah, I think when Miami signed him this summer, I think it was a one-year $4 million deal, $4 million deal, if I remember correctly. And I thought at the time, that's a steal. He, with the way the salary cap is ballooned last season, it's actually going to stay about the same this summer. But there will still be teams with money to spend, and somebody's going to offer him upwards of $10 million a year. So he's made himself a ton of money this season, like you said in your first question. I think he's a fan favorite in Miami. Clearly, Eric Spoelstra likes him. He's trusted him to do more than any other coach in James's career has. So I would anticipate Miami being pretty aggressive in trying to bring him back. He'll be an unrestricted free agent, so he can talk to anybody he wants, and I think there will be plenty of suitors. But Miami really makes sense for him. This is the best situation he's had, and I think Spoelstra has just used him perfectly, and it would be smart to stay there, and I think they'll be willing to pay, like I said, at least $10 million a year, or at least in that ballpark.
You mentioned that, you know, that Spoelstra's been a good fit for James and in the way he's using him. What have you seen out of the way that Spoelstra's using James Johnson that has translated into a career year for James?
So for the first few years of James's career, he was he got into a lot of trouble with fouling a lot. He turned the ball over a lot, but there was always, to me, he looked like one of the only guys in the league who was physically kind of on a similar plane to LeBron James, a guy that was 6'8", 6'9", had that kind of a body type and could still run and jump like a guard. I think the only other guy was maybe Josh Smith in his prime who was kind of like that too. And nobody ever, it was understandable because, like I said, he was a little bit out of control in those first couple of years. Nobody really trusted him to play a kind of a point forward role. But for the first time in his career, Eric Spoelstra, who of course coached LeBron James for a few years, has basically let him run the offense coming off the bench. You watch a Heat game and he'll actually bring the ball up the floor like a point guard. He'll get a rebound and go coast to coast and either set somebody up or finish himself. And he's got a versatile skill set for a guy that size. And this is the first time somebody said, okay, just go out there and play and use all those skills. And it's obviously translated to some of the best numbers of his career.
Do you think, you know, should he, you know, next year come around? I'm guessing if he stays with the Heat, he'll probably still be that first guy off the bench, or does he earn a starting role somewhere? Is this the best role for him, in your opinion, being a sixth man type guy?
I think if it was me, and maybe this is a little bit of Homer bias here, I'm sure most of your listeners know that James played for East and I was actually a teammate of his. I would start him at power forward right now next to Whiteside. I think his versatility at the four is really tough to defend. He basically plays starter minutes already. They have Luke Babbitt starting at forward and he'll play maybe 15 to 20 minutes a game. It's kind of an NBA oddity. A lot of coaches don't start their best five guys. And there's various reasons for that. Maybe they want to punch off the bench or something like that. But I've always been of the mind that if you start your best five guys, that's the way that you're going to get your best five guys to play the most minutes together. Because if they start, they're going to play the first 6 or 7 minutes of each half together. If they don't, you're basically piecing together minutes throughout the game. I think Miami would be a little bit better served if he was starting right now. To answer your question, I think there's a chance he starts for him next season, but given how successful it's been, I also wouldn't blame Spoelstra for thinking, okay, let's continue to keep him in this role. It seems like something that he's comfortable with.
Andy Bailey joining us, talking some NBA, covers the sport for Bleacher Report. Kind of shifting gears here, any pause for concern with the Cavaliers, the way that they're playing down the stretch? Is this kind of what maybe people expected with them, thinking that they can just cruise their way into the NBA Finals again? Or is there some concern right now?
I'd say there should be at least some cause for concern. I kind of learned my lesson last year. Was, I think, probably the last time I'll definitively pick against LeBron with the way that he willed his team back from that 3-1 deficit. Really opened my eyes. And they've done this before. Like, their defense looks pretty bad each of the last 2 years leading into the playoffs, and then they flip a switch, and everybody's thinking, okay, maybe they'll flip the switch again. The only problem this year is they've kind of run out of defensive players that they can rely on to flip that switch. Last year they had Mozgov, who wasn't great, but at least he was a big body who could kind of fill up the lane for him on defense. Now they're basically just relying on LeBron and maybe Iman Shumpert. I mean, those are your two only plus defenders. I guess you could say Tristan Thompson too, but then you look at all the minus defenders that they have in there. Kyrie Irving is one of the worst defenders at point guard in the league. Kevin Love's not a great defender. They've added Deron Williams, who was never a great defender in his prime, and now he's long past that prime. Kyle Korver is another negative that they added this year. So they've got a very explosive offense. They've got LeBron. They got a lot of shooting, but I think they have added some real defensive concerns too. Now, would I be surprised if they do flip that switch again like they have before? Not really, but I think it's fair to have a little bit of concern.
You know, the Nuggets seem to be, you know, playing pretty well right now. I mean, it's a team that, you know, seems like they have a pretty good nucleus for, you know, maybe if they don't do anything this year down the road. What do you think about the Nuggets?
Oh, I absolutely love the Nuggets right now. I think I just published something within the last week talking about how they're the most watchable team in the NBA. Like you said, really exciting young nucleus. I think Nikola Jokic is one of the most intriguing young players to come along in the last 5 to 10 years. Earlier this season, I kind of ran a search on Basketball Reference for players who equaled Jokic's rebound and assist percentage through their first 2 years. The only result that came back was Bill Walton. So basically, we haven't seen a big guy who rebounds and passes like Jokic since one of the 50 greatest players of all time, Bill Walton. They've crafted this offense around him where he stands at the high post, and these other exciting members of the young core that you mentioned, they run these backdoor cuts off of him, and his passing from the high post is just incredible to watch. They've become one of the most exciting teams to me. They're running out of steam here toward the end. Like you said, it looks like Portland might take their playoff spot, but if this group stays together and they get to kind of grow up together over the next year or two, I think they could be really good.
If they do somehow sneak into that 8 spot, Andy, do you see the series with Golden State being pretty exciting, especially with what they did to him in Denver? Or do you think Golden State is just, I mean, obviously they're the best team in basketball right now, you're just going to be too much and overpower them? Did the Nuggets, I mean, give them a little scare if they get in, you think?
Well, just as you started that question, I thought of that game that you brought up. They beat them by, I think it was 22 points or something. Mm-hmm. And that was before the All-Star break, when they've really kicked it in since the All-Star break. I think giving Golden State a little bit of a scare in the first round might amount to like one win. I would be surprised if Denver got more than that, but it would absolutely be an exciting series. Since December 1st, the Nuggets have the best offense in the NBA. So it would be very up and down, and that's better than the Warriors, the Rockets in that span. It'd be very up and down. There'd be a ton of points scored. Denver might be able to steal a game or two. I think it would be a heck of a series.
Just to close it out, Andy, I mean, something a little bit off topic for you, and I think it was you, but correct me if I'm wrong, you've met Johnny Knoxville of Jackass fame, right?
Very, very briefly. I don't know what research would have turned up that fact for you.
I think we talked about it when you were at El Trip, because it was in your bio at that point.
He was I must have put it in there as a joke or something. He was legitimately frightened of me, and maybe I don't blame him.
Why was he frightened of you?
Maybe not frightened. I don't think he wanted to be chased down by a fan. My brother was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I was visiting him, and we were on the famous Rodeo Drive, and I thought, that's Johnny Knoxville walking into a jewelry store or something. And I said, hey, I really appreciate your work on Jackass, and he just literally ran away.
Well, see, it's interesting whenever we have, a Bailey on, what we come up with, because when we had Jeff on during the season, we talked about the band Highland Elias, that Jeremiah actually brought that up again with the band. So
I just had to show my wife the band the other day.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I've been married to her for almost 4 years, and I hadn't brought it up yet.
My wife had their CD. She was listening to the show and says, I think I have one of their CDs lying around the house.
I passed one of the members on the way here.
Publicity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who'd you pass?
Paul Shaner.
Oh, okay.
I passed him on the way here. He was out walking around downtown.
It's amazing.
Members of the band are all over the place.
Andy, always good to catch up, man. We're getting down to the end of the regular season. We appreciate your time, and keep up the good work as always. Thank you.
Yes, sir. You guys have a good one.
Bye-bye. There you go. Andy Bailey joining us here on the Sports Zone, talking some